you know, we went to a country music festival and we're serving tacos and they thought guacamole was mushy peas. Rather than actually chase the young millennial crowds and colleges and everything, we wanted to actually change, you know, the perception of your normal rural Irish man or woman who hasn't tried anything different, you know?
Hello, and welcome to episode 85 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Thank you so much to everyone who is listening. Everyone is listening right now and everyone has listened over the month of October. We hit a new download record of 8,160 people. So thank you so much. It's been a long 6 months from March because in March, when COVID happened, there was a massive drop off in listenership and I was a little bit concerned because we'd grown every single month up to that. And I couldn't figure it out until a mate of mine told me that he hadn't been listening and he was trying to catch up because his commute was now gone. He wasn't commuting into Dublin City anymore. So there was 2 hours a day whereby he just wasn't doing anything. His commute was grabbing a coffee, walking to his desk and turning on his laptop. He had no time for himself. So that was a large part of the reason behind switching up the content so that every Monday you now get the Idea Lab, which is like a summary of all the best stuff I've seen over the last week, condensed. If you're not listening to that, try it out. It's a really interesting format. I also have a newsletter, which I want to drive as many people towards as possible. So go to mrgaryfox.com, pop in your email. I send out a newsletter every Monday morning with all the best stuff I've seen. And to be honest, that's where I'm going to concentrate a lot in 2021, is on growing the newsletter and on growing a private community, which I'm going to launch. I'll talk about that later. Not in this episode, but in a couple of episodes time, I'm going to launch a private community for people. You'll have to be on the newsletter to join. And it'll be exclusive to people who are actually part of the community. The newsletter will then branch off and become part of the community. There'll be two different versions. I'll go into all that detail later, but get on the newsletter because there will be a lot of stuff that I'll be sending out just to the newsletter. But in summary, thank you so much, everyone who listened. My goal is to try get to 10,000 before the end of the year. It's a bit of a push, but we can do it. We have two episodes a week coming out every single week between now and the end of the year. And then we'll start again in 2021 with two episodes per week. It's a lot of work, but I do enjoy it. And when people get in touch and share that they're enjoying it, it makes a huge bit of difference to me. For me, the last month has been a little bit tough. My current business is transitioning into a new business. And I found it very hard to get the mental space correct in terms of keep my consistency and keep my positive mentality about keeping going. Because we've had a lot of uncertainty about, you know, lockdown, is it coming, is it not? Okay, it's here. You can do this, but you can't do that. And I found that really tough. Been very honest with you. I found that super tough. I found it very hard because when you work for yourself, you really only yourself to answer for, which is good and bad. But to try counteract that, I swore to myself that for all of this lockdown, I was going to exercise every single day. I felt it was important to take part of control of one part of my life, go, right, I can do that every single day. Only I am responsible for that. It'll get done or won't get done, but it'll be on me to do it. And it's been superb. This is day 14 of 42. Someone asked me, oh, 42, is there some magic like secret number to that? I was like, no, that's just how long lockdown is going to last. So if you're wondering, that's what it is. If you're not following me on Instagram, that's where I'm sharing kind of what I'm doing every day. So as an accountability thing, I share up what I'm doing every single day. So if I'm going for a run or tomorrow I'm going to go for a cycle or I'm doing weights or whatever it is, I share it up on Instagram every single day. Why I'm sharing all this is that I just believe for us as entrepreneurs, consistency and momentum is everything, everything. For me, it's not the person who's the smartest. It's not the person that's working the hardest. It's the person that shows up every single day. I try to apply that to every single part of my life. So that's why I started the Momentum Challenge. I've also been getting a little help with it. I've teamed up with Parallel Nutrition, who are handling all my food for the challenge. So they handle my breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the whole challenge so that I don't have to worry about cooking. I don't have to worry about prepping meals or, you know, when it's, especially in the winter. I find that's the hardest in the winter because you might be finishing up work and it's dark and you're like trying to get the momentum up and you're trying to get the, oh, got to cook now. It's been super handy. I'm a week in. It's been such a little gift. Check them out. parallelnutrition.ie. Their Instagram is actually pretty cool because you get to see all the sneak peeks, the foods. Go to Parallel Nutrition on Instagram. I'll be working with them over the next month. I'll let you know how it goes, what I think, what's worked, what hasn't. So check them out, parallelnutrition.ie. If you want to join in on the Momentum Challenge with me as well, just follow me on Instagram. A few people have actually started doing with me, sending me their stories every day as a form of accountability. I love it. I love it, love it, love it. So that's a little bit of positivity for today. Let's get involved. Let's make the next 42 days really good and really impactful. And you're starting the new year in cracking shape. It doesn't have to be about fitness. You can do whatever you want for the 42 days. Just do something every day that makes you feel a little bit better, a little bit in control. On to today, on to the interview. That is my sermon over. Go in peace. Today, chatting to Shawnee McCleary, a fellow country entrepreneur, which is brilliant. I'm delighted about. Shawnee's from up in Monaghan. He runs Blasta Street Kitchen and more recently Street School, which is what actually piqued my interest about Shawnee. Shawnee started his own food truck way back. I'm not actually sure how long it was ago, maybe 4 years. He says in an interview anyway, you'll be able to hear it there. And it went really, really well. Food trucks are one of my tips for huge growth in the next 12 to 18 months, as I believe they're COVID friendly. You can literally pull them up anywhere. You know, you're not reliant on a premises. I think a lot of people who unfortunately go out of business with the premises or who decide to volunteer and go, do you know what? I don't want this overheads anymore. I don't want this massive restaurant. I'm going to start my own food truck. I'm going to travel around. I'm going to have my own hours. I think food trucks and food trailers are going to be my tip for 2021 as one of the big, big opportunities for entrepreneurs. I've talked about this previously in the pod. So I was really happy to get Shawnee on, as I think there's a lot of little gems he drops in there about the whole business, how it works. And they actually do a business in a box idea whereby you literally go to Shawnee and he will sell you everything from the branding to the truck, to the idea, to the support. So I think it's cool. I think it's something Irish entrepreneurs need more of. I think we need to make it easier for Irish entrepreneurs to set up businesses. That's a little bit behind the thinking of my own private community, where I want people to be able to get a huge value, but from a closed group, as I think there's huge value in small private groups working together and being totally honest and transparent. A lot of people who are sharing free information on the internet are really only trying to sell you something. They're really only trying to get you into the sales funnel, and the advice you get can be a little bit iffy. But Shawnee and the lads are doing it really, really well in terms of you can buy a whole business in the box. I'm literally doing their whole sales pitch for them here. Let's just kick off with the interview. Here is Shawnee from Blasta Street Kitchen and Street School. Shawnee, welcome to the pod.
Cheers for having me, Gary. I'm a fan.
Good stuff.
For a while now.
That's a good start anyway.
Yeah.
Tell everyone a little bit about yourself and your business.
Yeah, so guys, I'm Sean McCleary. I'm the co-owner and co-founder, along with my partner Nikita, of Blasta Street Kitchen, and then more recently Street School. So we're, suppose you could say, a street food startup sales and consultancy company based here in Monaghan.
That's good to get some country entrepreneurs on for a change. It's nice. We've got to be representing each other.
The culture revolution.
I think that's what you said. Yeah, that was your email to me. Get more culture entrepreneurs on. So always happy with that. You your business. I've been talking about it for months in the pod. Not specifically your business, but the idea of food trucks and the idea of people evolving their business now that COVID has hit. We'll touch back. I want to come back and talk a good bit about that at the end. But how did you guys get started? Like you mentioned, you're doing a lot of things there, but where did this all start?
Yeah, so myself and Nikita finished college mid-recession 2012, and then spent the next 5 years basically accidentally traveling the world, working a lot in hospitality and tourism, kitchens, and met a lot of great people and just picked up ideas and I suppose picked up on a lot of things that we thought were missing back at home. So really just trustworthy. Now, don't get me wrong, Dublin street food scene's been booming for a while, but I suppose we were looking on outside of that, you know. There was a bit of a gap for a culture street food revolution, I suppose you could say, really. So, yeah, we moved home in 2017 and set up Blasta Street Kitchen. And the aim of that was just kind of travel-inspired food, but just to get out there and actually talk to customers, get the street food kind of hustle and bustle happening here, you know, whereas previously it was a bit of, I think street food outside of Dublin and the main cities had a bit of a bad rep for a long time. So it was all kind of chip vans and greasy food outside Croke Park, people cooking the same stuff at Croke Park that was left over from the nightclub the night before. Like it was a bit of a, I seen it all growing up as well, 14, 15, 16. I did my time in a local chip van, and that's probably where it all the seed was planted, really, you know. Always been interested in food. I just seen the opportunity to someday write, you know, food that you trust and you would eat and you're happy to serve to people, and just putting a nice, clean, fresh kind of spin on street food, you know, changing the perception.
And was, when you were traveling abroad, was like food was your background, was your background as a chef or as a manager, or what was your background when you were abroad?
The funny thing is, I actually did an honours degree in archaeology and science was my background, but throughout college...
Of course it was.
I was cooking every day, every chance I got, cooking for work, cooking and getting jobs in cafes and side jobs in food trucks. And the same as Nikita, her background is industrial design, branding and stuff, but she was too much of a people person to be stuck in the office. So she was always taking on side jobs as a barista, and kind of together, we just always loved hosting parties and events, and, you know, Tex-Mex as well has always kind of been a big thing for us. Just, we like the colorful style of the food. And so in turn, yeah, not traditional food background, but then I think leaving Ireland was a big eye opener. We lived in New York first. We did the Man versus Food trail over in New York, went to all the eateries and Katz's Deli for the Reuben sandwiches. And, you know, you start off every day with your bagel, cream cheese, bacon, coffee. And then you're just on your days off, you're wandering the streets, eating pizza. And it's exactly how you'd imagine it, obviously, you know, if you've been there, but just going to all the food hotspots, eating the, you know, chicken wing, hot wing competitions. And then, but to be fair, I think we worked a lot in New York. We were bartending, we were meeting people, contacts and relationships, which would come back to really work in our favor. I can talk a bit more about that in a while, but, you know, spent a year in New York and really made the most of it. So we went from being broke college students to then being able to afford, right, where's the next step? The next step was New Zealand for 2 years, which, if anything, we realized, right, the food over here, the quality of the produce is amazing, but the actual food is so boring. New Zealand is like 90s Ireland. So just imagine, yeah, everything's like sweet potato and lamb shanks and grilled veg, and every post office and shop you go into, you can buy it. There's a hot pie cabinet. So they're just eating hot pies, drinking cans of Red Bull, snowboarding. And I think we really missed the actual colorful, nice, fresh food over there. And again, we had a job then. We started working in a hotel restaurant. I was helping run a hotel restaurant there. And we just enjoyed putting a fun spin on the food, you know. So we ended up spending a couple of years in New Zealand. But yeah, as I said, the produce next to, like, doesn't get any better, but there was just no fun things happening. There's no street food, no food trucks outside of maybe a couple in Wellington. So we weren't really in a position to be able to run our own business over there, just due to visa kind of situation. We were able to work and everything, but it was this thing was kind of working away in the back of our mind here. What's next? Where do we go?
And when you're away, what was that your mission? Were you fact-finding, you know, intentionally with the purpose of, oh, you know what, I'm going to come back and set up a business? Or were you just kind of just enjoying the experience of traveling and just enjoying exploring?
It was a bit of both. Like, in the background, subconsciously, we all, well, personally, now myself, just from a young age, I'm not a good employee, let's put it that way. I just always knew I wanted to do my own thing. Like, so I was out like selling Pokemon cards when I was 7 and 8. And I set up a wee car wash business when I was like 10 and had 2 12-year-olds working for me. And then had a tuck shop in my locker at school. I was selling sweets and single cigarettes and anything, really. And just hustling hard, saving the bus money every week and walking 4 kilometers to school in the first couple of years. And just, I just love the whole self-sufficiency, being able to create a lifestyle that you've, you know, created yourself. Not that it's extravagant, but just that I kind of thrive off the self-sufficient element of it, you know,
the freedom of it.
So, and to be honest, other than traveling and working, you're kind of forced to work. I mean, I'm glad I did it all the way we did it, but, you know, if I had remained in Ireland, I'd pretty sure I probably would have set up some hustle, food related hustle. But so other than traveling and working abroad, I guess, like, I'd always kind of done my own thing. Then the next step, yeah, it's basically everything kind of made sense when we went to Melbourne. Then we spent a year in Melbourne. My God, my eyes were just open. The street food scene over there is absolutely amazing. We worked 6 days a week. We were off Mondays, and we could eat 7 or 8 different places on a Monday. We'd go to like an Asian street food market. We'd sit in and have fajitas, tacos, go on to another place and have Peruvian food, pisco sours. And, you know, we really went to town on it. And I would carry a book, like I was known to be carrying the little book, writing down every idea, trying to kind of document what was going on, because it can all be so overwhelming. And then, yeah, once a month, you'd take a wee quiet Monday night, you'd sit in and you'd open your book and start planning. I think it was Melbourne, so you could say 18 months before we moved back to Ireland, I was planning hard, thinking, right, how do I take this back to Ireland and monetize it and keep Nikita, you know, both of us need to use the skills that we have and turn it into money and business. So Nikita's background then being branding and design, graphic design, industrial design, would later help us actually 3D design the food trucks, help people brand them and stuff. So in the background, I was kind of thinking, how do we tie this all together? And it made sense, obviously, then to just start building a really good brand for ourselves from abroad. So,
Shawnee, why were you carrying that book around with you? What was the book? Was it a notebook or a recipe book or what was it?
Yeah, I think basically just before we left New Zealand, I started kind of documenting prices of produce and any writing down menu ideas and menus that I'd seen. And then in Melbourne, everywhere I went, I just carried the book with me. I'd write down prices of menu items and kind of good combinations of cocktails that went with food. And I would just shamelessly ask someone as well, you know, can I speak to the owner? Yeah, just how much rent is this place for a restaurant, you know, here in the middle of the city in Melbourne, comparing prices of rent then back, ringing places in Monaghan, Cavan, Galway, to see was there a viable business opportunity for us to create.
And what did they think when you were asking these questions? We're like, who is this Irishman asking me how much rent I'm paying?
You'd kind of have them loosened up with a wee drink or something first, you know, it wasn't that straightforward. But a lot of the time, it's just a completely different atmosphere there. You know, you've got the owner coming out to the table to see if you're okay and sitting down and chatting. That was pretty common. Or you might have the head chef or someone would just come out and make sure all the guests are well taken care of. You're not talking fine dining now, just street food joints or whatever it is, you know.
And when you say street food, what was that over there? Because I think here it is very different. You kind of touched on it earlier in terms of it's here, but kind of in patches. I know where I used to live in Grand Canal, there used to be a street food market outside every Wednesday, but it's not that common. So what was it over there? What can describe what it was when you say street food? What would that mean over there?
So you're talking fast casual food, places that everything's served on compostable plates or bowls, whether it's kind of tacos or noodles or in and out places. You go in, you have your food, you use the hot sauces, you're chatting to different people. It's kind of, as I call it, like carvery culture here. They want to go in, not speak to anybody, get a mountain of food on their plate and, you know, stay for 3 hours if they can and have a few pints of Guinness. You know, it's just a completely different environment here. Like, you know, these places abroad, like kind of more cosmopolitan cities, you know, they want to eat small and often. So it's very common on a Monday or Tuesday, you've got a couple of, like, especially hospitality staff and foodies, you know, they're going around having a snack here and then going over to the Argentine barbecue place and having a glass of wine and a steak empanada. And then you might go, you know, for a walk on the beach. Then later on, you're going to meet up and have noodles and a beer. So that whole, you know, whereas I always joke in Monaghan, we don't send any food trucks anywhere on a Sunday because people in Monaghan and Cavan and Meath and, you know, anywhere outside the cities, again, like they nearly plan what they're going to do for their Sunday dinner on a Monday night, you know? And there's no, like, to eat spontaneously on a Sunday is sinful nearly still here. Like, it's
the
strange.
Roast, the Sunday roast is still embedded in the culture, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just, and you know, you're even getting dirty looks for working on a Sunday these days. You know, it's still, that still exists. My grandmother would always say to me, geez, you're working on a Sunday. Like, you know, is that not? But then, you know, we're off Monday, Tuesday. It doesn't make a difference to us, like, you know.
Okay.
But
you were just doing research. You were doing homework on everything over there. And was the idea to go, oh, we can definitely bring this home? Or was the idea to tweak it? What was the idea?
Yeah, like, we weren't really trying to break any boundaries with food. More so how people eat and think about food and how people share hot sauces and talk about their experience of eating and the whole feasting table style dining, you know what I mean? We just wanted to get good quality food, use local suppliers that no one was utilizing here. For example, we do a pop-up ticketed event and it could be 40 tickets, but on the night we'd make people sit beside strangers and, you know, just kind of mix it up a bit. Because as I said before, this was kind of carvery culture. People go in sitting elbow to elbow beside strangers. They won't say hello to them for, you know, they won't even, you know, they don't even greet each other. They're sitting touching elbows for 2 hours. Like, it's just strange. We kind of joked that we were going from Melbourne to move back to Ireland and we knew it was going to be a bit of a daunting experience. So we said, right, we'll treat ourselves. We went to South America for 3.5 months on the way home. Mm. And the plan, we had booked flights to travel from the south, the very bottom of South America, Patagonia in Argentina, the whole way up.
Oh, amazing.
And finish in Central America and Mexico, then fly home. And we never made it to Mexico. Just we got, there was so much to see along the way. But one thing that they all had in common, most of the countries and the cities and similar to Southeast Asia, they all have this really community, sense of community around dining and eating out in the street. And La Boca in Argentina, it's a very big, predominantly like soccer fans, and you know, the football match, the streets just fill with barbecues, choripan, they're just cooking chorizo sausages on bread with onions, and strangers are sharing salsa and sauces and making each other food, and it's just a really nice buzz. And that, not so much the food that was missing in Ireland, but that whole, that's kind of the vibe that was missing here. We wanted to kind of just change up how people, you know, we went to a country music festival and we're serving tacos and they thought guacamole was mushy peas. You know, these guys coming up saying, oh, I just want a burger and chips. And we're like, well, we're doing fajitas, enchiladas, tacos and nachos. And they're just looking at us like, what planet have you came from here? Like, okay. Rather than actually chase the young millennial crowds and colleges and everything, we wanted to actually change, you know, the perception of your normal rural Irish man or woman who hasn't tried anything different, you know. And this is only 3 years ago, like, you know, and then showing them, you know, just getting them to try different flavors. And now, you know, we've got a wee following locally as well here, where, you know, you've got people that at the start didn't want to try anything. Now they're coming up and buying bottles of hot sauce, you know, and they love, oh, give me extra guacamole on this and that, you know, the usual.
What was the vision? What was the plan when you came back?
I suppose the best way to put it is to be self-sufficient through means of food and hosting and just being, we didn't want to be in a kitchen cooking lovely food and have waitresses or waiters serve that food out to the customer. We wanted to be that bridge between, there was just us and the consumer. So whether it was, we were always obsessed with food trucks, so I think that was going to be inevitable. But I think the plan, if it was financially feasible, we would have ran a series of pop-up restaurants. But the problem is, it's just not very sustainable, to be honest, in rural Ireland.
And why did you choose rural Ireland instead of going to, you know, somewhere like Limerick, Dublin, Cork, Galway, as you talked about earlier?
It was such a blank canvas. It was just we seen it as a blank canvas, an opportunity to get out there. And, you know, the cities had already been kind of transformed and the street food scene existed there. And it just seemed like everything was happening in Dublin or Cork or Galway or Limerick or, you know, so we just seen an opportunity. Let's go back, use Monaghan, which is where our families are from, as a home base.
So what was the first step when you came back? How did you make your first euro? What was it?
Came back, there was a lady who had bravely opened a tapas restaurant in Monaghan, and people just hadn't taken to it as warmly as she had hoped. They just didn't understand the small plate concept. And so we approached her and said, look, are you interested in dividing the cost of the rent and electricity and everything? And we'll, you know, we'll take the place over more or less, and you can keep your place on a Saturday and Sunday night. We wanted the place the rest of the week. And she was delighted to share the bills and everything else. So we opened a pop-up burrito bar and made bottles of our own green and red salsa and gave out bottles and hot sauces and business cards. And 6 weeks into the pop-up, we started getting bookings and bookings for private catering and events. The pop-up restaurant, it was no longer sustainable to do everything. So I bought a secondhand hot food trailer and used that to start catering 3, 4, 5 events and give out business cards and just network with people hard. And that was it then. The rest was history. It just got crazy. Had to start hiring staff, had to start manufacturing. Well, needed a second and a third food truck. So it only made sense then to get Nikita's kind of industrial design background in. And, you know, how can we make a food truck ourselves, customized? I'm 6'4". It needs to be quite tall inside. Mm. And we basically reverse engineered a food truck that we bought straight out of China. And we wanted to see how can we make this more, just a better built food truck. So, for example, all the food trucks we use at the minute, rather than stainless steel bodies, which are quite heavy and look, not to bore you, like, but a lot of councils and market traders, they have certain weight limitations on trailers. Mm-hmm. So basically we 3D print, our trailers are 3D printed.
Okay, that's interesting.
It's fiberglass, it's a fiberglass tube. It's 3D printed in China. But it was a bit of a, that sounds easier. Yeah, we spent 9 months researching this, looking at different parts. You know, stainless steel is a lot cheaper in Eastern Europe. Fiberglass, the mold of the fiberglass to make our food truck is 14,000 euro here in Ireland. You know, it's a fraction of that in Asia. So we just decided, right, what's the best parts of the food truck? What's the most affordable place to get these parts? And we just started building it like a jigsaw.
And so you used Nikita's background in design, and you just had an idea and then you bolted it all together. And that was for your own food truck. That was for your business.
That was for our own. The first step we did, we bought one. We used that, but we then also used it to reverse engineer it kind of. And then the next step is we made three Blastus Three Kitchen food trucks. And that at that stage, we made three, and then we started all of a sudden, we had food critics coming down and trying the food. Like through, for example, Monaghan Tourism or local enterprise office would ring us and say, guys, this person's coming to town, food critic. You know, we'd love to send them out to your place, and or we'd love you to come up and cater this event when they're here. And next thing, we were in the Sunday Independent, the Times, and it just went mad on the internet. There was 60,000 people had liked it or shared it or whatever, and the following online started growing. So all these little things just started coming together. But as that happened, people started to ring us in and say, look, we love the look of that little trailer. Can I get one for myself, for my coffee business, for my, to be fair, mostly coffee and trebiacs is quite big at the minute. And grilled cheese sandwiches is another big one at the minute. But people are just coming to us saying, look, or there was actually people who were in a similar situation to us saying, look, I don't know what I want to do, but I do want to do a food truck. I love dealing with people and I'm good with food. So we would say, well, look, we're not going to set you up a taco truck directly in competition with us, but let's work on something. And we've developed then everything from Asian street food, coffee and crepes, bubble waffles, ice cream, South African barbecue. We actually have a Tex-Mex truck we set up down in Dingle. We have, a few dozen street food businesses we've set up now in the last kind of 12 months. But and this all kind of happened as an accident.
Are they partnerships or are they people that have just bought trailers from you?
Some people, we keep them on a retainer. So they have us at the end of the phone for ongoing advice or menu planning, or if they just want to change their branding. Or we also pass on a lot of work. So because at the minute we're quite busy with street schools, setting people in business, if I get a phone call tomorrow to cater a wedding for 25 people in North County Tipperary, I would ring Next West and say, are you up for doing this gig next week? They're going to pay you €1,000 and you're going to give me 250 quid of it, or, you know, something along those lines, really.
Okay. So talk me through the kind of evolving your business then, from you guys were doing a lot of the on-site stuff yourself in terms of Blastus Street Food. It was going in, you were catering, you were doing everything like that yourself. At what stage then did you start going, there's actually more business here coming to us just through referral and through people asking us for advice? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, so to be honest, I probably should have actually acted on it sooner, because it was probably 6 months of me working at the food truck, cooking tacos, chatting to people, and you'd have people driving up from Limerick, from Dublin, we had a couple drove up from Kinsale and Cork just to meet us and see the food truck and ask us questions. And I was too busy serving food and chatting to them. And, you know, it was only the light bulb moment, about 6 months later, we're just sitting at home one night and thinking about it. And we have a solution. They have problems. How do we turn this now into a fully fledged business without sacrificing Blastus Street Kitchen? Because at the end of the day, you're not very credible as a street food consultant or a food consultant. I used to have, you know, the reason I think, to be honest, that a lot of people are coming to us for the setup and the advice and the food trucks is because we're also in the trenches. We're in the front line concurrently. Like, we're right now, today, you come to us for advice and I can say, well, yesterday we were out, you know, now I don't do as much cooking, but we still have to, I still run most of the aspects of my own catering business from afar, just from a computer now rather than cooking, you know. So we can give people real-time advice, I suppose, on how to operate. And I think that's why, it's worked. But basically about a year and a half ago, I decided, right, this is it. It's all or nothing. If I can't afford to hire a manager to come in here and run my business sustainably, then what's the point in being in business? And I ended up hiring a guy, a chef, Josh. He's still working with us. And a chef who I'd worked with 10 years ago, or 12 years ago, as a 16-year-old in the local hotel, you know. He was looking for a change of scenery. You know, it was just perfect timing, really. I just hooked up with him and said, look, Josh, do you want to quit your lovely, steady job 16 years? Do you want to quit that, come work in a food truck with me? Like, he jumped on the opportunity.
And then you decide to step away and start focusing on the trucks full-time yourself, of manufacturing, building them, and becoming more of a consultant, was it?
Yeah, basically, after 6 months of Josh running everything quite successfully, I offered him an equity share on Blasta. I said, look, I'm going to give you a share, a percentage share of my entire company if you keep doing what you're doing. Just so you know, I'm going to step back a bit. I'm going to work on street school, but just understand that a rising tide carries all ships. You know, that kind of, like, I might not be here doing the hard grafting as I used to be, but understand that in the background, everything I'm doing is going to help both, you know, both of us and the brand and everything else.
And what was the idea for street school then? What was your grand vision from that? If you're stepping back from Blasta, what was the vision for street school?
So we were nominated for best emerging franchise. I think it was 2019. For Blasta Street Kitchen, right? Based on a business plan. So I had a plan to maybe play around with the idea of rolling out a franchise in each county. So everyone got a food truck package, but they were confined to their county lines. You know, you can't cater an event in Tipperary if you've got the franchise for Cavan. It's not. We had 60 franchisees, potential franchisees that we met over Skype or phone calls, or they would come in person. We'd meet them. We worked with mentors from Enterprise Ireland to put together a scoring sheet on how to score a franchisee, a successful franchisee. We started to realize, right, the people that we're meeting here, right, either have food, they love the Blasta, but they have no money. Or else the people, we actually met some people who were very wealthy. They loved what we were doing. They wanted a franchise, but they had no passion for food, no understanding of it. They just wanted to buy a franchise, put three or four operators in there and hope that it works. We interviewed a lot of people. We had three people that we scored very highly, and we were ready to hand them over a franchise. We had everything ready. We physically had five or six branded food trucks, brand new. We had uniforms, business cards, menus, costings, everything. The hard work was done. And it was literally just over a glass of wine. We were sitting up in the house one night, and Nikita just says, you know what? I just don't have any go too big, too quick. And the people that have met, they're grand, but none of them really have the same passion or the same want or drive or hunger. And we didn't know what to do. We had a big opportunity, but we just didn't know how to chase it. And
so you decided to stop at that stage. You decided to stop. You'd gone down the route of finding all these franchisees, and you decided then just to call a halt to it.
Yeah. So we wasted hundreds of hours of work, money, time, everything. Best decision I've ever made.
What drove that, Shawnee? Was that gut feeling, or was that what drove that? Because that's a huge decision to take.
You know, I didn't like the structure, like the formality behind a franchise. I didn't want somebody having to follow everything guide by guide. You know, the diced tomato had to be 3 millimeters diced and all. It just became too, I was like, this isn't fun anymore. So that was part one. But part B was Nikita and myself just following our gut. But thirdly then, right, this is where I kind of seen the opportunity. I went and rang every single franchisee back and said, look, I'm really sorry, Gary or Paul or whoever it is. Thanks a billion for your time. You're a great person, this and that. The only reason you're not getting it is because of A, B, C or whatever, right? But you did tell me that you had a passion for Asian street food. So why aren't you setting up your own business? And then, you see, I just want something turnkey. I'm not willing to do the hard work, basically, you know?
Okay.
And I just, light bulb moment. I was like, oh, shit. These people all want to do their own business. They're just not willing to put in the work that we just did. We just spent hundreds of hours, like, putting together paperwork and supply chains of where to buy packaging, fresh produce, consumables, everything down to, you know, we rang nearly every local authority in the country to find out where every single casual trading license for a food vendor was. Like, we did a lot of work. So I rang them all back and I'd bring them and say, hi, Tom, this is Shawnee from Blasta Street Kitchen. Look, thanks a million for coming down the last day. You look, you're a great person, everything. You're ticking all the boxes. I'm just following my gut on this one and I'm deciding to pull the pin on the whole thing. But if you're interested, come back down and we'll help you do everything you need to set up your own coffee and tray bake business. So it was pretty successful. A lot of them came back and they were delighted. We set up quite a few businesses straight away.
So you're basically a one-stop shop for, I want to start a Gary's Coffee and Donuts street food. I come to you and you give me everything. That's essentially what your business does.
Everything. Even we would say to you, Gary, right, if you're based in South County Dublin, I would say to you, actually, you know what, Gary, to save you on renting out a kitchen for yourself for the HSE purposes and everything else, I actually know a guy in South Dublin who's willing to share a kitchen at the minute. He's another client of ours. So that connects you straight away. You're saving your rent and you're collaborating with another person. Mm.
I think this business couldn't be more timely. I talked about it, I think 3 or 4 weeks ago on the Ideas Lab podcast, whereby so many restaurants and cafes are sadly going to be closing down now. I mean, what are those chefs, restaurateurs, cafe owners, what are they all going to do? I think food trucks is going to be the, and this is even before we connected, I think there's just such an opportunity there now for people to remain in business, but without the massive overheads of before.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. You'll get a lot of people saying, you know, well, I'm not sure because the weather in Ireland and the, you know, a lot of people don't realize Scandinavia, there's a massive street food scene there. In Sweden, they have like Tex-Mex Fridays and Taco Tuesdays are like a massive thing where families, a company that we buy our tortillas from, right? They've got a big presence. I think their actual mother company is based in Sweden, but they have big sales on tortillas on Tuesdays and Fridays. They have, you know, restaurants that don't technically always do Tex-Mex stuff start to, you know, it's just, it's massive over there. But the thing is, yeah, it could be minus 20 degrees in the middle of winter. They still have food truck parks, permanent kind of outdoor street food venues.
When I put it on the pod, I did get a few people saying to me, oh, you know, I'd love to start a food truck but I couldn't because of XYZ. And a lot of it came back to permits and stuff like that. Is that a big issue?
So I can't give away too much of the secret sauce here, right? But we have a very successful way of working around that. Like, completely legitimately, obviously, but without saying too much, yeah, we connect people. Our clients will never really be stuck for work. We would connect them with existing companies in their area. A good example here, right? So a lady rang me 3 weeks ago. She is from Cavan. She's 50 years of age, and she's been a pig farmer for 33 years or something, right? And she says to me, you know what, Sean, just my brother owns a large workplace and he's always asked me to do food over there. And I do a bit of catering on the side. And, you know, can you help me turn this into a business? So what we do then is take her, do the 4-hour session with her. But we want to understand, like, what is your story? Like, we get to know about them. Makita's taking notes in the background, creating a brand, messing around with logo ideas and names. But this lady has such a story, like, and she can talk for Ireland. She's collecting her food truck off us on Monday, right? We come up with the idea, a pig's tail, T-A-L-E.
I love it.
The reason being,
I love it. So many fantastic.
And stories. She has this really good quality organic bacon, but she's never made grilled cheese. She's never made, you know, she would cook white bread, butter and bacon at home and for the lads and her son and her father. And, you know, but it was just showing her that, you know what you could do with that bacon? Like, make this pimped up grilled cheese sandwich, serve it from a food truck. So you're getting someone who's, she's a very hard worker, very good with people. Everybody knows her. She's one of these people, but just didn't have that. How do I turn this into a good street food offering? And secondly, right, where do I go to sell this? How do I get licenses? How do I get permits? So again, without saying too much, I've connected her now. She's got 5 days a week work in 3 different venues. So what I did is just ring people on her behalf, large workplaces in her area, and also a really busy market in her area who we know the organizer. Her food was grand, but it was just showing her how to get good. Like, she hadn't heard of sourdough bread, you know, she hadn't heard of just simple, more artisan stuff that was out there, you know.
So are you getting a lot of people coming to you now as a result of COVID going, look, my business has been impacted in XYZ way, can I do a food truck?
Yeah, inundated with people. So we actually had quite a few trailers in stock. So after a busy season of Blast the Street Kitchen or my own personal, whatever we're busy at, I just heavily invest back into one company or the other. And the last while it's been street school. So I would just continue making food trucks or trailers and equipment. And I'd buy companies maybe that liquidated in the UK and buy all the catering equipment from them brand new and then have it there as an option to sell with a food truck. And to be honest, we were wiped out about 6 weeks ago now. We've nothing. We've sold everything.
Wow.
We've nothing left. We've 16 food trucks manufactured at the minute. We're building our first Airstream at the minute, which is a 4-meter Airstream trailer.
They are very cool looking. I've seen them crop up a lot. I've been researching something in a very similar area to that recently, and they are very cool looking.
And it appeals. Yeah, they're just, to be honest, we weren't big. They look cool, but there was a few people doing them already. So our flagship model is still this kind of 3-meter rounded roof pod that kind of, we call them, hot food trailer or street pod or cater pod. There's lots of names for them, but But on the side now, we're starting to develop different kind of shapes and sizes and everything, you know. even for our own business and stuff, just to stand out that bit more.
Well, I'll get you to send me some photos of those, and we'll pop them in the notes for people, so people listening now, because it can be kind of hard to picture this in your head if you're not familiar with it. So I'll get you to send me on some photos of stuff that you've done, and we can put them in the notes so people can go to MrGaryFox.com, look at your episode, and be able to see in the notes. So what's the future for you, Shawnee? What's the plan?
So basically, long story short, about a month ago, we started getting not just interest from the normal startup food businesses, market stall holders, and we started getting interest from non-food sector, right? So let's just say a large telecommunications company or mobile phone network, as we call them, they were contacting us saying, look, every year we go to college campuses around Ireland. We give out free SIM cards in the foyer of the college. We give out phones. We give out deals. We've no way to get to that consumer now. Mm. We're literally locked out of colleges, right? I would offer them these branded pods to go this is more or less a little shop window on the campus of a college. They can use this. We'll fully brand it for them as, I'll not mention the names, but you know, you're branding it for them. They can have five out of different campuses on a single day. But that led me to, of course, another deviation. So in the background, I've hired, for the first time now, we've hired a sales and marketing executive. And I have given her the task of developing a sub-brand to target the non-food sector, if that makes sense. So just is Marion's goal now is driving sales and generating leads. She comes from a very strong non-food sector kind of, she would have a background in telecommunications, modular homes, lots of different kind of stuff like that. So her goal now is we've built a website. We haven't launched it yet. We're going to launch it in the next couple of weeks. And it's, well, there's no point launching a website. I've learned when you don't, at this minute, until for another 10 days, 15 days, we can't fulfill demand. You know, we don't have the supply. So we're kind of keeping our little treasure trove when all our food trucks are ready to go again, you know.
Brilliant.
So
it's a great place to be in the minute in such a difficult business environment. It's great to be out of stock, essentially, of your product. What are you thinking about now in the next? You think COVID is going to have a positive impact on your business, or what are you thinking?
I heard you listen to Gary Vee.
Yes, infrequently. I kind of dip in and dip out. I find a lot of it's a lot very repetitive, so I kind of dip in and out.
Yeah, that's the thing. It is very orientated around the TikTok and social media. And, you know, at the same time, I kind of get the point where you probably know that he's the type of guy, he's like, you know, I'm going to tell you to do something now and it will work, but 95% of you will leave this room and not do it. That's why I keep saying the same things over and over. Mm. And it's interesting, like, because I listen to him every day. I've never set up TikTok, you know, and I've no doubt that if he did do it, it probably will be, you know. But anyway, one piece he's always kind of pushing is the timing piece. Like, timing is so important. There's no luck, but there is luck when it comes to timing, you know? So basically moving forward, yeah, I think we're very lucky in that the timing's on our side. And also as an entrepreneur right now in this whole climate, I think anyone who would be lying if they said that they're not secretly having, you know, it's enjoyable because you're constantly looking for solutions to problems. So although it can get stressful and caught up on you, you know, I refer to Gary Vee saying, he's like, it feels like I'm a fish that's just been dropped into water for the first time, you know. And that's why it is, you're just swimming, like, you're like, whoa, this all kind of makes, everything's falling into place now. Whereas, you know, people tell you prior to COVID, people would say to me, like, you know, right, you've got a lot going on, you should probably scale back a bit. The same people who were telling me that 6 months ago now don't have a job, or they've had to move out of their house because they can't, you know. Not to be negative about it, but that's kind of, I'm a big believer in keeping multiple things going at once. Obviously you are as well.
Yeah, well, diversify. You have to diversify. I think that's what you learn as an entrepreneur. I think when you go to bed at night and you realize, okay, if I don't make money tomorrow, I don't have money. And you just realize that, well, if one thing happens, and God, none of us ever imagined COVID, but I think we all, as an entrepreneur, you soon realize, you know, you get a couple of hits and you're like, geez, if that had been worse now, it could have taken me out completely. And you do realize then the value of diversification. Like, I've seen it in sectors I've worked in whereby, you know, one or two bad things have happened and it's wiped out an entire quarter of my business just from one thing, you know? So yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with that more. Shawnee, we're just about wrapping up. Can you recommend a book that had an impact on you personally or professionally?
Do you know what? I've just been introduced to the last 12 months to the world of podcasts. Like, I used to listen to Joe Rogan podcasts and stuff that were, I used to like a bit of easy listening in the background, but the last 12 months now, I'm all about podcast, just not necessarily podcast, but filling yourself or listening to, because your time is so limited, just listening and educating and reading on things and listening to things that are related to myself, you know. And I think you actually mentioned it. What I see, I'm really enjoying and playing on something at the minute. We're just launching a newsletter, right? Mm-hmm. Inspired by Gary Fox. So I think right now, as you said, like the future at the, well, now is the future hyper niche newsletters.
Mm, definitely.
Now, in terms of, yes, we've more, no, I'm not really a book. I'm caught off guard. The last book I read was probably Marching Powder, going through South America, about a guy who was spent time in prison. Since then, I've been hard out self-employed, unfortunately. But yeah, podcasts, everything, food, business, entrepreneurship, street school or street food, and just innovation, I guess, and kind of planning forward and stuff. But yeah, that's kind of the buzz at the minute for me.
So where can people learn a little bit more about yourselves, Blasta, and Street School?
Yeah, so I think we've got Street School, the web, the Street School, STREAT, streetschool.com. Through streetschool.com in the next 2 weeks, we're launching a bi-weekly newsletter. And again, just also the Instagram and Facebook page is just Street School. And just get in touch. There's no obligations. Just ring us, ask us questions, let us know what your plan is. And then we will potentially offer you with 3 or 4 week backlog at the minute, just a half day consultancy spot if people are interested in really getting stuck in and setting up their own business. One thing I would say is that if you're interested in street food in Ireland and you're following a blog just on street food in Ireland, you're going to be left behind. So I have, yeah, most of the blogs we follow on Instagram and everything else in different places, Melbourne, New York, Hong Kong, Singapore, what's happening there? Because you're guaranteed it's not going to be happening here for at least another couple of years unless you do something about it, you know? So there's permanent food truck parks. Like 3 weeks before we left Melbourne, the world's first permanent 24/7 16 food trucks in a park, just opened all the time. It's constantly busy. So yeah, you just have to look at the cities that are, you know, a bit further ahead than us, and that's where we're going to be. So the street food at the minute, Ireland and the UK, 2 billion euro. 2 billion. That's 9 zeros, Gary.
For those of you who are taking notes at home. Spent.
Yeah, that's in the book. But yeah, so 2 billion euro a year here, and there's virtually no one taking you by the hand and offering consultancy or any kind of advice, you know. So it's booming, and it's going to be, I think it's just really going to grow. The future of street food.
Brilliant. And I hope it stays that way.
And sharing.
Great. Listen, thank you so much, Seanie. Appreciate you taking the time to come on the pod.
Thanks a million, Gary. Thanks for having me. And let us get your eats to the streets.
Thanks, Seanie. That was episode 85. Let me know what you think of it. Let me know what you think of anything to do with the pod. I love when people get in touch with me. Instagram, Twitter, carrier pigeon, I don't care. Send me a message. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know how you're getting on. Let me know what input you have for the pod. Get in touch. I'll help you in any way I can. I also look in feedback as it makes the pod better. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. As we spoke about earlier, doing the Momentum Challenge, 42 days for the entire duration of lockdown. I'm working with Parallel Nutrition on that. So follow the journey, jump on Instagram. You can follow me there and start some sort of momentum challenge yourself. I'll see you back here next Monday for the Idea Lab. I'll talk to you then.